From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 28th day of March 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We'll look forward into tomorrow's USDA reports. They're due out at 11 a.m. Both the grain stocks and the prospective plantings reports will be released. And we'll take a look at the cash grain market today as well. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net will be here. He's in Windsor, Illinois. As we close out our time together, we'll discuss both tar spot, that with Nathan Klicheski, plant pathologist from Extension here on campus, and we'll run through the weather forecast across the growing regions on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at what happened in the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much. Hey, can you tell me a little bit about the fundamentals and technicals of the market over the last week?
Well, the last week here, basically, we've just, seen some downward pressure. I think it's worries over what USDA may or may not say tomorrow morning or tomorrow at midday. Soybeans are definitely, unless we would get something awfully bullish, they're going to close out the month of March lower. Corn and wheat, though, are in position to close out the month higher. So it's just based upon that, that would indicate that tomorrow the traders are kind of looking for the corn and wheat numbers to be generally friendly and the soybean numbers to be generally bearish. And just taking a look at traders' estimates for stocks on hand on March 1st for corn, corn stocks are expected to be about 600 million bushels less than what they were a year ago, where on the other hand, they're looking for soybean stocks to be about 600 million bushels more than what they were a year ago. So that's pretty significant in a sense. It basically says that, the corn balance sheet is going to be much tighter versus what the soybean balance sheet is going to be as we go for the April report when they give new revisions on the supply-demand balance sheets.
And what are you telling farmers about the marketplace?
I mean, right now, everybody's kind of positioning themselves for some form of planting lateness. And I think the trade is generally thinking that maybe the corn acres, not all of the corn acres are going to get planted or the intended acres to be planted, and kind of feel that soybean acres are going to grow. I think it's a little too early to maybe totally jump to that conclusion, but there is no doubt that eastern Nebraska, western Iowa, and many parts of the north, and we still have a lot of snowpack to melt and how quickly that melts and what kind of flooding we have. But I think in years past, when we've had a lot of river bottoms flooding out, a lot of creek bottoms flooding out, a lot of times we end up with total less acres at the end of the day. And that, I guess is probably what I would be looking at. But that's down the road. That's not going to show up until the June report. I think tomorrow, the planting number, unless USDA is sharply different than what the trade is looking at, and the trade is looking at corn acres to be up roughly a million or so, and looking for soybean acres to be down roughly a million and a half. Unless USDA would show us something, a much bigger change, I don't think the planting intentions report is going to mean much. I think the weather map is probably more important when it comes to that. And, of course, how much grain that we've lost in the Western Corn Belt due to the flooding, I don't know if that's 50 million bushels of corn, 100 million bushels of corn, 20 million bushels of beans, or 50 million bushels of beans. And we're really not going to know that for some time. I think, there's estimates out there, but at this point in time, I think estimates are what they are. It's just estimates. we may have to wait until we get to the June report to see how much damage was has actually occurred in the Western Corn Belt as far as stocks on hand.
We're at that time of the year where the marketplace looks forward into the growing season and really calculates based off of the new crop. However, there's an awful lot of old crop still in the bin. Should farmers be considering sales?
Well, probably at this point they need to write, go through the report and play the seasonality. And the seasonality is normally higher during the month of April as the trade worries about planting conditions. And I think there's reason enough, at least at the moment, that we can worry about planting. But, even in 1993, when we had historic flooding in the Western Corn Belt, the upside really didn't catch. The market really didn't catch to go higher until you got into middle May. And that's when she took off and it pretty much rallied, until you got into toward the end of July. This year, I know we have a lot of flooding in the Western Corn Belt, but at least at this point, I don't think it even measures up to what happened in 93. Now that could still play out. So of course, 93 was just constant rain. I know the weather maps are indicating above normal precip, and is indicating that we could be in a wetter period as we go into spring, but it's not even close to what it was in 1993, at least at this point. So I think the market is going to be, especially with the stocks on hand, the only thing that's really going to worry about is maybe corn acres, but there's plenty of time yet for the market to, the whole weather pattern could change. We got 30 days to 60 days, 30 to 45 days for the weather pattern to shift to something more normal or drier, warmer, before we start really talk about losing a lot of acres of corn. I don't know. That's the beans are the ones that's probably it's going to be really difficult to get the bean market to do much on the upside when the trade has this general attitude indicating that we're going to see less corn acres and probably more bean acres. And then, of course, we got the South American hedge pressure, which really begins to build during April, May. But, it looks like Argentina's in a situation where the Argentina farmer is going to be a holder of soybeans because the value of the dollar has made the peso very cheap. So farmers in Argentina are going to be tight holders. Whether or not that firms up the soybean market or not, we'll have to kind of see on that. But we got to get through tomorrow's report, and then we got to get into the month of April, and we'll see how things look. But technically, the soybeans are probably in more trouble and indicating more downside pressure than maybe, whereas corn and wheat futures are kind of suggesting that there's more reason to be a little friendly those two markets.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan.
Very well, Todd.
That's Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, trade negotiators from China and the United States are making progress. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin are expected to be in Beijing through Friday. The in-person talks, which will be followed by a round in Washington next week, are the first face-to-face meetings the two sides have held in weeks. Reuters news agency spoke to four senior administration officials and reports China has put updated proposals on the table, and that these go further than the previous iterations. The Chinese are talking now, apparently, about forced technology transfer in a way that they've never wanted to talk about it before, both in terms of scope and specifics. Washington wants Beijing to end practices it says involves the theft of U.S. intellectual property and the forced transfer of American technology to Chinese companies. It also wants improved access for American companies to China's market and a reduction in China's industrial subsidies. U.S. officials say the talks will continue as long as progress is made on the core agreements being negotiated. These include force technology transfer, cyber theft, intellectual property rights, services, currencies, agriculture, and non-tariff barriers to trade. Part of that agreement, according to President Donald Trump, would be to leave some tariffs in place. The American Soybean Association isn't pleased about that, as ASA considers the removal of tariffs on China part of an exchange for China to lift its retaliatory 25% tariff on U.S. soybean imports. ASA President Davy Stevens questioned how can the U.S. and China reach any deal without doing so. ASA, in prior statements, said, quote, it's not enough for China to make one-off goodwill purchases, unquote, of U.S. soybeans over the last 3 months. Any longer-term plan to manage soybean trade under which China would guarantee to buy specified amounts of soybeans over an extended period but still keep its 25% tariff in place is not an acceptable alternative to full market access, according to ASA. For clarification's sake here, the ASA is thinking that if President Donald Trump leaves some tariffs in place, it's likely that the Chinese will leave some tariffs in place as well. Let's move now from the global stage to domestic issues, where the chair of the Senate Ag Committee, Pat Roberts of Kansas, made an impassioned defense of agriculture against the Democrats' Green New Deal this week. Roberts says it holds nothing new for agriculture, noting even Senate Democrats refused to vote in favor of it, with most voting present. The Kansas Republican says U.S. producers are a model for other nations on sound science, innovation that includes biofuels and wind energy, and voluntary soil and water conservation.
America's farmers and ranchers raise the same amount of beef as they did in the 1970, but they do so with 33% fewer cattle. Over the last 50 years, American farmers have reduced water use in pork production by 41%, and the list goes on.
The Kansas Republican contrasted the recently enacted Farm Bill's practical steps to boost animal health, conservation, and ag research with the Green New Deal.
Unfortunately, vague proposals such as the Green New Deal that contain no real details, no metrics, are not going to solve the issue of climate change in any meaningful way.
He also took aim at what supporters of the Green New Deal call the moral imperative, saying it may well be one, but going on to note farmers continuing to feed the world is also a moral imperative. And finally today, on the business front, Cargill is making investments in Latin and South America. The chairman and chief executive officer of Cargill, speaking during an interview with Reuters in Bogota, Colombia, says while his company does not have exact figures at this time, because it's just invested $200 or $300 million in Colombia, that in this whole area over the next 5 years, that number could reach easily $1 billion. Now, Colombia's political stability and geographic position are attractive for investors, says David McLaren. Cargill purchased two poultry processing plants in Colombia. For Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The tar spot is a relatively new disease in the Midwest. It's been showing up on field corn in Iowa, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, and Florida, says University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Nathan Klicheski.
That's where it's found right now. But in terms of severity, where we've seen it the most and where pressure is the highest, if you would take that kind of lower portion of Lake Michigan, that lower U portion, kind of draw a section around there. That's where it's the greatest severity right now. That's where we've had the most pressure.
Klicheski says this is because tar spot likes nighttime lows in the 70s and a whole lot of humidity. Here's a preseason checklist for farmers in these areas concerned about the disease.
We do know that hybrids have differing tolerance to this disease. They're all susceptible, but some are less susceptible than others. And if you can get information from your seed producers in terms of what their rankings are for their hybrids that they're selling and which ones are more susceptible versus less susceptible, go with something that's less susceptible if it fits your production needs.
Wisconsin Extension plant pathologist Damon Smith has a list of some corn hybrid tolerances to tar spot. That list can be found on the Badger Crop Doc website. The address is badgercropdoc.com. Let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. Matt Bennett of agmarket.net joins us. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us. It's that time of year. Have you gotten your equipment out and got it ready for the planting season?
Yeah, we're pretty much ready to go. Most of our equipment's ready to get going, gone through the planter. A couple guys that help us, have been itching to get things going too. So everybody's been pretty busy trying to pitch in and get things going.
Tomorrow, USDA will update the acreage and grain stocks numbers. What do you think the surveys will show as it relates to acreage?
AgMarket.net, we came out with a acreage of 91.7. To me, with the trade being at 91.3, I think if you're actually at 91.3 tomorrow, it's going to be fairly friendly. I guess my opinion is that the number's going to be scrutinized a little bit just based upon what's going on here this spring. And so, I guess I'm just not thinking that any number could be too big necessarily. I mean, obviously, if you get 92.5, 93, it'd be fairly bearish. But I do think a number like that would be discounted rather quickly. So I think anything under 92 ultimately could be, if nothing else, supportive.
The soybean number could be the wild card. Are you down at the 85 million mark?
We started out there. It's kind of a crapshoot, if you will. It's pretty tough to figure this soybean acreage number out. As far as intentions go, I do think a lot of folks were probably shy on what they might be doing. I don't know that anybody was too excited about, planting a ton of soybeans this year, especially the way the numbers worked out. But at the same time, the last couple of years, guys have made a whole lot of money, planting beans. And so it's pretty tough to say that everyone's just going to completely go away from it, especially with some of the fiscal needs, of the producer here in 2019. It's no secret that liquidity has been drained. And, for the most part, we're all sitting here, a little bit less desirable cash situation than maybe what we would prefer. But I think the final number ends up above 85. But as far as tomorrow goes, 85 to 86, it would seem to catch it as far as I'm concerned.
If it shows up at 86, will the market react?
I think if it shows up at 86, the market could have a little bit more of a pressure, if you will. Because I think most people think it's going to go up from there. I think people feel like the corn acreage number has nowhere to go but down, and the bean acreage has nowhere to go but up. But with that being said, if you would actually get a bullish surprise with regards to corn, I think you might be able to pull some acreage in if the weather would straighten out. I feel like there's more swing acres in 2019 than I've probably seen in my career due to the way the fall ended up last year for tillage and field work. And so if you would get a bump out of this market for corn, I think guys would readily reward that kind of a market with some additional acreage, if at all possible.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thank you.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. On Thursday afternoons, we usually walk you through the weather forecast with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. He's out of the office this afternoon. Let's start in central Illinois and see what's happening for the next several days. Today, of course, very nice outside, at least in temperature terms, though we will have a little rainfall. 73 degrees across the center part of Illinois, and we'll drop down to 50 tonight. Tomorrow, 58 for the high and 51 for the low. Saturday, 56. And then we drop off to 37 degrees. We will have rainfall or some scattered showers, at least through Saturday. Cloudy skies on Sunday with just a high of 46 degrees and a bit cooler on Sunday evening, a low of 28. By Monday, though, things turn around. Sunshine for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 55, 62, and 71 degrees in the center part of Illinois. Looking out west, Lincoln, Nebraska is 54 degrees today with some rainfall, the same for tomorrow. Saturday, Sunday, a bit more sunshine, though it'll be cooler, 43 on Saturday for the high, 54 on Sunday. They'll drop to 26 degrees on Sunday evening. To start the work week, Monday 59 and then 67 on Tuesday, both under partly cloudy skies, that in Lincoln, Nebraska. A bit cooler, of course, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, 52 today, 47 tomorrow, partly cloudy skies there. Full clouds Saturday and Sunday, 39 degrees is the high on Saturday in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but they'll come up 51 degrees on Sunday, and to start the work week, 46 degrees. The cold spot, of course, is a bit further to the north in Fargo, North Dakota, where it'll be 37 today. Under cloudy skies, a bit more sunshine tomorrow, 43 degrees. and that'll be one of their lowest lows at 25 until they get to Saturday night when they drop down to 20 degrees. Again, mostly clear skies on Saturday. They'll go to 36 degrees, 43 on Sunday, 43 on Monday in Fargo, North Dakota. In Kansas, 64 degrees in Manhattan today, 54 tomorrow. A little sunshine eventually, and it'll be windy on Saturday, 46 degrees. 53 on Sunday and 61 on Monday. Their low temperature comes on Sunday evening there at 28 degrees. And checking a couple of other places around the planet, we probably should go down south to South America, that is. We're in Mato Grosso do Sul today. They had a high of 84 degrees. They'll go to 88 tomorrow, Saturday 88, Sunday 87. Both of those days, they may get a little rainfall. It'll be warmer on Monday at 91 degrees. Their lows in the very low 70s. So good growing conditions in Mato Grosso, Brazil, for the corn crop there. That's second crop maize. And in other parts of Brazil, looking at Mato Grosso do Sul, a little bit further to the south, 91 today. Partly cloudy skies. They'll drop to 71 tonight. Friday, 89 and 70. Saturday, 91 and 70. 90 on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, although their lows are in the very low 70s. And finally, one other place in the Tocantins. That's in the northeastern part of Brazil. 87 today, 90, 92, 92 on Sunday, 90 on Monday, and Tuesday, 90 degrees. And again, their lows in the mid-70s. That's a quick look at the growing region's weather. You can always find out more on our website at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.